Welcome to Laity Square, a podcast exploring the intersection of faith, culture, and politics through the eyes of a lay Canadian Christian. I'm your host, Ramon Jimenez. In this episode, we explore the definition of nature. What exactly does this word mean? Where do these meanings come from? And how do they shape our policies and interactions with it? Let's dive in. Hi, welcome back to the show. I enjoyed taking a short break from podcasting, but I'm definitely glad to be back. Lots of news this week. Prince Philip, Queen Elizabeth's husband, passed away at 99. Several major Canadian political parties held their conventions in recent weeks, and a week from this episode's date, the federal government is expected to release its first budget in 2 years. I'm keeping an eye on all these developments and may touch on some of them in future episodes. But today, I want to close out on the thread I've been running for almost a month now. We've been discussing the supernatural, superstition and idolatry, miracles, and more specifically the resurrection leading into Easter. And today, I want to focus on nature, or the natural, to contrast and complement the previous discussion. As always, let's start with definitions. What comes to your mind when you hear the word nature? Depending on what you like or where you grew up, you may think of a pristine beach, an unaltered valley, an untouched mountain brimming with wildlife, and similar images. To a great degree, today's definition of nature goes hand in hand with unadulterated or unaltered. What if I tell you that this is a fairly recent definition? When you look back in time, the first meanings of nature had to do with being and growing. The alternate meaning, having to do with essence or character, is also pretty old. At some point, the word took on a very broad meaning. The physical or material world at large, or even the whole universe. Here's two examples to illustrate this meaning. First, you may have heard of a very prestigious scientific journal, where several breakthrough discoveries have been first announced. Do you remember its title? That's right, it's Nature. Here's the second example. Do you remember the definition of metaphysics in philosophy? It's the branch that studies reality and the connection between mind and matter. It's a Greek portmanteau that literally means beyond nature, beyond the physical. A contested debate that persists to this day is whether humanity itself is part of nature, or whether human activity can always be considered natural. On one hand, everything we do in the physical world seems to involve some manipulation, transformation, or application of things that already existed. Even something as artificial as a plastic plant is made of products derived from natural substances like oil. On the other hand, if we define nature as that which lives and grows, pretty much all human products by definition become artificial. What influences these various definitions of nature? Like many other definitions and groundings for concepts, our worldviews inform the definitions we choose. Here are a few examples. In the pantheist worldview, God is nature. This is a viewpoint of Hinduism as well as several Aboriginal cultures. Even today, you may hear Earth being called Gaia or Mother Nature, either as a belief or as a poetic designation. That will inform a specific attitude towards nature. Conversely, in an atheist worldview, nature is simply matter, the expression of the laws uncovered by science. Here's Charles Darwin's definition. I mean by nature only the aggregate action and product of many natural laws, and by laws, the sequence of events as ascertained by us. This will also inform specific attitudes of its own. In taking Christianity as an example of a monotheist worldview, God is not nature but exists outside of it. As creator, nature bears his mark and points to him. Humanity is his masterpiece, part of a creation and therefore part of nature, with a special role in it, to fill it and to subdue it, yet another specific attitude towards nature. These are the major religious worldviews. We can also look at this from a metaphysical point of view, from the perspective of how do we define and relate to reality. Here's an interesting articulation from Jean-Edward Veith. professor of literature at Patrick Henry College. From a modernist viewpoint, where all that exists is the physical or the rational abstract, mind is external to nature, and thus free to observe and decode it, to anticipate it or even predict it. For nature is just the expression of the laws of science. This is essentially the same as the atheist viewpoint we saw earlier. From a postmodernist viewpoint, mind is not just external to nature. It actively seeks to bend or build reality in its own shape. This viewpoint seeks to apply technology to modify or reshape our environment, our own bodies even, to better conform to the reality that the mind dictates. Hopefully, by now it's obvious that our relationship with nature, the boundaries and the contract we set for ourselves, are mainly dictated by our worldview. But why is it so? Isn't this the domain of science? Wouldn't you expect this to be the ideal type of problem for science to solve? To answer this, I need to go back to a foundational concept we've discussed here before. Science cannot take the place of philosophy. A lot of the problems people have with science today have nothing to do with science itself, but with the appropriation of science by some philosophical worldview. Thus, you often find the postmodernist or the religious taking issue with science. But science is not the enemy. Science simply can't answer questions about origin, identity, purpose, morality, or destiny. Of course, that hasn't stopped several worldviews from hijacking science in various ways. Take the current conflict on climate change. No matter what side of it you're on, there seems to be science on both sides of the debate. There also seem to be other interests that may obscure or alter science. After all, both sides can't be right. Unfortunately, pure and raw science can be as difficult to find as a patch of nature in a poorly planned megacity. Thus, we're left with our philosophical worldviews, which, to make things more complicated, we seldom adopt comprehensively as a whole, which makes it hard to agree on anything but the most basic and fundamental facts. I think most people would agree that some degree of preservation of nature in its original state is necessary, that some measure of contact with such nature is healthy and desirable, while also agreeing that some degree of intervention is needed to maximize our health and comfort. But from here, things get messy in a hurry. Let's look at the following question. Is something natural always better than something artificial? Think about housing. For safety, security, and privacy reasons, we intervene in nature substantially when we build our homes. We use a mixture of materials in various degrees of transformation to prepare our homes and surroundings. And interestingly, this isn't limited to the boundaries. We also alter the climate, controlling the temperature and the humidity and effectively insulating our dwellings from their surroundings. While we cherish the occasional interaction with nature in the raw, in general we seem to prefer certain improvements to our environment. What about food? Do you prefer seedless grapes or regular ones? What about watermelons? We know that naturally occurring genetic errors cause fruit to lack seeds, or at least visible and hard seeds, and there are generally natural techniques to breed these variants. So which one's the natural fruit? The regular one or the seedless one? What about changing the shape of the fruit, like those cubic watermelons that are grown into a container and take its shape? They were invented in Japan in order to be easier to fit in fridges and safer to cut. Are they natural? Are they better than natural fruit? What about plant-based meat substitutes? Companies like Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat take plant-based proteins and other ingredients and process them to reproduce meat's flavors, texture, and other attributes. This is supposed to be better for our health and better for the environment. In that sense, is it better than natural beef and poultry? And what about genetically modified organisms or GMOs? According to some worldviews, any application of science to nature is itself nature, but these products remain controversial. We don't want to repeat the experience of margarine and other vegetable fat spreads, which in time were found to be less healthy, not more, than the animal fat products that they sought to replace. As we talk about fat, I think about energy. What is the best source of energy? Is it natural? Is it moral to continue to use gas for our vehicles? Or should they run on electricity? If so, where do we source it from? The sun? The wind? Nuclear energy? What about controversies around the materials used to build batteries for the cars and the total cost of production and ownership? Are we condemned to continue to burn carbon for decades to come? Can we even afford it? And again, note how the underlying worldview shapes many of these reactions, and sometimes in surprising ways. Remember Professor Veith's observation on modernist and postmodernist approaches to nature? They seem fairly different, but in his view, they stem from the same idea. The idea of humans as something apart from nature. The idea, even, of humans in the place of God. I can think of at least one example where these opposite viewpoints converge. When the pandemic started, there was no shortage of cartoons and stickers decrying humans as the true virus. Interestingly, my first recollection of this concept goes back to 1999, when the seminal Matrix movie came out. Humans as a virus was a key characterization of humans by the simulation through Agent Smith. And I think it's no coincidence that this came up in a movie that questions the very reality of our world. After all, if reality is just a construct of mind, then humanity has no special place in creation and no special rights to it. But also, if this world exists merely by chance, as materialists believe, then humanity has no special place in it and no special rights to it either. Does the Christian worldview fare better? I think it does. Remember, no matter how modern and complicated these problems seem, we can always go back to the origin and purpose to find guiding principles. In Christianity, this is laid out very early in the book of Genesis. God created everything, nature in its broadest definition. Therefore, humans are also created and as such are part of nature. Moreover, we have a special role within nature, to fill the earth and subdue it. Though Eden was perfect in every sense, Adam was in charge of working and caring for it. These basic facts can shed light on some of our issues. In them, there's an explicit expectation to sensibly exploit nature to our benefit. In this viewpoint, God continues to develop his creation providentially, which is to say, through our own efforts. This viewpoint entails the broad definition of nature where everything around us, yes, even our homes, even our cars, whether gas-powered or electric, are in a sense part of nature because they're not part of the supernatural realm. However, as I like to say, heaven is in the details. The interpretation of these principles can be diverse. The idea that this earth is marked for destruction and that our true identity and destiny are spiritual has been used to justify attitudes and practices that others deem incompatible with the stewardship of creation endowed upon us. What is the right definition of subdue? And if nature encompasses the whole universe, is humanity really able to destroy it? Is it really able to save it? Fascinating questions. And faced with problems like this, I'll take a worldview with sound foundational principles over any other anytime, because then I know what my homework looks like. Dig deep into those foundational definitions. Think carefully as I answer new questions from first principles. Seek the viewpoint that best corresponds to facts, even if it doesn't fulfill my innermost desires or inclinations. I fully expect these issues to flare up as the next federal budget is announced. The budget is expected to earmark significant spending on a so-called green recovery. And if this really is a life and death matter, the crisis of our generation, I hope we can come together and think robustly, carefully, and respectfully about all the implications, the evident ones for sure, but also the more nuanced ones too. I'll keep an eye on this, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it. Until then, stay safe. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't subscribed, Laity Square is on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Closed caption episodes are available on YouTube and Instagram TV. Join the conversation by following Laity Square on Twitter or Instagram and sharing your feedback, questions, or topic suggestions.